Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is The Guardian.
I think not only the government, I think this is time for every Australian to think whether China is a threat or a partner. But it seems that it is the Australian government to play up all the issues of contention and make the atmosphere even more sour and bad for further collaboration between our business.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. You're with Catherine Murphy. Normally, I'm the host, but this week, Daniel Hurst is in command. Daniel covers foreign affairs, and this week, he sat down with China's acting ambassador to Australia, Wang Xining. I don't think this conversation needs much preamble. We know that the relationship is in some difficulties, and this conversation turns around that. I also encourage you to listen through to the end. Daniel and I have some housekeeping that we need to put in front of you at the end of this conversation. Listen up.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, Mr. Wang. How would you describe the current state of the China-Australia relationship?
Thank you, Daniel, for your interest of our relationship. Since the establishment of our diplomatic relations, we always believe that a stable and healthy relationship will serve the interest of our two countries and our two peoples. And I mean, what China wants from Australia remain unchanged from the time, as compared to the time when we set up the comprehensive strategic partnership. So it's quite saddening and disappointing that over the past 5 years, the relationship has not been in a good shape. And there seems to be quite some point of contention between the two countries and between the governments. That's what we're trying to find out solutions because, as I said, we are trying to make this relationship working for the interest of both peoples and both countries.
So why has it gotten worse in the last few years?
I know there's quite some different interpretation of the sources of current state of relationship. I will explain what I observed. I think over the past 5 years or so, there seems to be quite a lopsided observation and even ill intentions interpretation of China's development, both in terms of politics and economic and economy, trade and technological advancement. So that has led to some ill-advised and misguided political judgment on the role of China in its relationship with Australia and in its role in the world. So sadly, that even resulted in a series of what I would say negative policies and actions from Australia against China that has been executed in a very disrespectful way, and also in ruthless and even arbitrary way, which have led to what I say destructive effect on our partnership, which was defined roughly 5 or 6 years ago.
What actions do you say are ruthless?
By being saying disrespectful, because we were defined as a strategic, comprehensive strategic partnership. So as partners, we should behave like partners. And whenever there's a problem, whenever there are issues we don't see eye to eye, there are diplomatic ways and the ways to deal with differences in as partners should do. But, for example, what the Australian government's decision on Huawei, the decisions on a lot of initiative from Chinese business to invest more in Australia, and of course also the decision on the Belt and Road agreement between Victoria government and the National Development and Reform Commission. There's no discussion, no proper discussion, no proper negotiation, as partners should do. And as partners, we should try our best to get rid of the misunderstanding and the misinterpretation of the other's strategic aim and strategic intention. But no such effort has been made. And also, you know what happened to our journalists. You are a journalist. You know what happened to our journalists in Sydney. They've been brutalized by certain agencies from your government. So this is not the way to treat a partner, particularly to treat China.
I think those journalists are now free back in China, right? Do you have an update on the situation of Cheng Lei, the Australian journalist who's still detained?
Madame Cheng Lei is going through the a legal process according to Chinese law and regulations. So, because she is an Australian citizen, so she will be provided consular service from your diplomatic and consular mission in China, and also her legitimate rights and interest as a foreigner will be guaranteed and has been guaranteed and ensured in our legal system, in our legal practice.
The Australian government says there's been a lack of detail about why she's been detained and arrested. Why has she been detained and arrested?
It's in the legal process, and she's been charged for leaking national secret to foreign entities. So this is a case pertaining to national security. The details will be exposed to the public according to certain regulations.
You talked about how partners should treat each other. A lot of Australians would have seen the trade actions over the past 18 months that have been taken against a range of export sectors, coal, barley, wine, mm-hmm. seafood and others. At the same time, Australian government ministers have said they haven't been able to reach their counterparts, their direct counterparts. Mm-hmm. Should China, as a partner of Australia, agree to talks at that ministerial and leader level?
I know the media and also the public here are very focused on these issues, but the definition of what happened and the label of what happened is something we don't agree, because whenever there are company, there are business and associations who complain about certain practices by foreign countries such as anti-dumping and anti-subsidy. The government need to answer to these requests. So it happened here. I talked to the press that there are up to now at least 107 cases of anti-dumping and anti-subsidy investigation launched by your department, the Australian relevant department. So there are 4 cases that took place in China. And for some commodities, whenever some defects such as metal residue that's been adding or pest that's been identified in agricultural produce. I think the administration in China has the obligation to deal with such cases. But in the market, we need to play fairly, right? And I don't think what the Australian government has been doing in terms of setting barriers against Chinese business investment is fair. Because, you know, last year, our foreign direct investment, in total to the world, grew by 12%. But Chinese business investment in Australia went down about 60% because they've been scared away. They've been driven away by what seems to be ostensible barriers that's been set up by your government.
Just on those trade actions, ultimately some of them will be decided eventually by the World Trade Organization. But the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Zhao Lujian, said at a press conference in July about Australia, "We will not allow any country to reap benefits from doing business with China while groundlessly accusing and smearing China. When a certain country acts as a cat's paw for others, it's the people that pay for misguided government policies." Mm-hmm. Doesn't this show that at least in part the trade actions rolled out by China are motivated by politics and not legitimate trade grounds?
Actually, there are a long list of differences between our two governments. And naturally, there's such things happen between every two countries, even between Australia and I wouldn't say which country. You would have a list of differences. And the key is, as partners, how we handle these cases. And the other thing is whether you treat China as a threat or as a partner, because I heard, and we heard, top-tiered officials publicly claim that China is the number one threat to Australia, which we don't believe it is true. At the same time, as I said, there are inadequate diplomacy that's been executed by your government in terms of solving these differences. And to make the matter worse, I think what the trajectory of the negative moves I mentioned that has been going on starting from roughly 5 years ago go in line with the attack that's been launched by the previous U.S. administration against China, both in terms of subject and timing. So that is not helpful to have a working partnership that should be independently organized and executed by the two entities involved.
There's a review underway about the Port of Darwin. The Chinese company Landbridge has a 99-year lease. What would be the consequence on the relationship if the Australian government cancelled this lease?
Again, I think business is business. There is a contract signed between a Chinese company and the Northern Territory government. And also, I've been there. I think the Northern Territory government is very keen to promote further relationship with China. And also, Darwin is the nearest city to China geographically. And people are talking about further collaboration between the Greater Gulf Area, which include Guangdong Province, Hong Kong and Macau, with Northern Territory. I know the Chinese company is planning to expand the capacity of the port, which will help the Northern Territory to increase cooperation in terms of scale and in terms of intensity with China, which will help the development of Northern Territory. And I talked with the people who's running the daily operation of the port. They are Australian citizens. And the most important thing is I wonder whether Australia can afford to break another contract. So I won't be surprised if the intelligence and the security apparatus would stretch its hand again to a normal business operation. But as far as I see, this a very awkward argument about the potential security danger that's been posed by a business operation.
Do you accept it, that it's a sovereign matter for Australia, if the security advice is that it be cancelled, that that's able to be done, or is would there be a reaction from China?
There will be we made response to all the negative moves. So we explicitly expressed our opposition to the moves that's not going in line with the positioning of our relationship, the comprehensive strategic partnership. But it seems to me that all these responses have fallen on deaf ear. So nobody in the government seems to be listening carefully about what my government have expressed. And even in certain areas, it seems the tension are still going on. And it's very disappointing because we believe this year is the 50th anniversary of Mr. Whitlam's visit to China. So I think 50 years ago, there are greater differences between China and Australia, but we managed to start a process that turned out to be mutually beneficial for both sides. And I don't think the model of our relationship in the past 5 years should serve as a model for the next 5 decades.
Would China impose some extra costs or some negative impact if the Port of Darwin lease was cancelled?
As a responsible government and a government that has a mature diplomacy, we react to what's been done. And I know media like to make hypothetical analysis of what's going to happen, but we think it should not happen. But when it happened, we have to make response to it.
Have you made direct representations to the Australian government about the Port of Darwin lease?
Actually, we made representation to all the issues that we don't see eye to eye. And it's funny that your colleague in another media who had a off-the-record chat with one of my colleagues fabricate a so-called 14-point list, because the list should be longer than 14 points. And it's funny to me because my colleague is a very mature diplomat. And when we are negotiating with a government, it's like a card game. And we're showing the media what our cards are. And it seems to be that the media think the Chinese diplomats are all idiots. And I think it's an idea to use such a fabricated, a misleading made-up, to use it as an excuse to accuse China of certain wrongdoings.
I think the list was real and it was given to the journalist, right?
My colleague was offered an opportunity to explain why our relationship is not in good shape. So she tried to enumerate certain points that your government and my government don't agree upon. But that's not all. And the key is not what happened, what's on the list. The key is how we solve it, how we deal with it. Is it the way we deal with it in line with the spirit of our relationship, of our partnership, or is it should be dealt with in a very, again, I say, ruthless, arbitrary and disrespectful way?
One of the points in the list was about unfriendly and antagonistic media reporting on China and about outrageous commentary of the Chinese government by Australian members of parliament. Do you now concede that that's not, you know, it's not possible for the Australian government to restrict those two aspects, that in Australia we can't restrict the free press or restrict the comments of parliamentarians?
I think it pertains to different cultural background and traditions, but this is a relationship that needs contribution from all elements. And whether it's from media or from legislature, it is our hope that they make judgments, they make analysis according to facts. And it is, I, as far as I know, some people make judgment on China based on certain conjectures and insinuations, and they are not facts. But the aim is to retain a certain sense of superiority. That is a pathetic psychology, as far as I see.
But didn't China want movement on some of those points listed?
Sure, and I think our job is to do the troubleshooting, right? And we need to discuss with our counterparts in different departments of your government and try to find out a solution for those problems. And the process has been going on. Actually, we have more complaints because there are more cases of rejected proposal from the Chinese business as exposed to the media. I would not identify the names of the Australian business and the Chinese business involved because it's our culture and our way of doing things, because we still want to give them opportunities for further collaboration. But it seems that it is the Australian government to play up all the issues of contention and make the atmosphere even more sour and bad for further collaboration between our business.
In retrospect, was that list a mistake? Because it's been reported that the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, took it to G7 colleagues a few months back. Was that an own goal in retrospect by China?
I think your colleague in another media has not done his job according to professional ethics, because it's an off-record conversation. And it's not a complete list, and it's not the something we try to brief the media about how we will handle these cases with our counterparts in the Australian government. We are still very keen to engage in a very fruitful and a constructive dialogue and troubleshooting process to get all these problems solved in the end. So that's served the fundamental interest of our partnership.
Well, why not resume ministerial calls then? What level is the contact currently occurring? How often do you speak, for example, with the foreign minister or her office in Australia?
Well, we have different level officers talking to their counterparts.
So there are official level contacts. I guess people hear about the freeze on ministerial discussions, but what happens on a day-to-day basis in terms of discussions between Australia and China?
We keep talking to each other at different level between officials. As far as we understand, ministers are political leadership, a member of political leadership. So for them, we can't organise a talk for the talk's sake. We have to see the results of the talk. Like you see what happened yesterday between President Xi Jinping and President Biden. They are not empty talk. They talk about substance, and there's concrete result coming from such high-level talks.
So what would be the precondition for returning to ministerial talks between Australia and China?
First, we need to prepare for concrete results. We need to find a real solution for certain problems between certain ministers. And we need an atmosphere, because when you see the top-tiered officials keep on saying that China is a threat and keep saying that Australia may get involved in a military conflict in certain part of China, this is not a conducive environment for engaging in ministerial talk.
So I'm just not particularly clear on what you want the Australian government to do specifically in order to allow talks to resume?
The talk may happen anytime, but we need preparation, both in terms of political atmosphere and of technical preparation. So it may happen anytime, but we need a suitable environment and we need talk about the substance in advance.
So it would need and the Australian government to state that China is not a threat and that Australia wouldn't intervene in Taiwan. Is that what you're saying?
I think not only the government, I think this is the time for every Australian to think whether China is a threat or a partner. If you believe China is a threat, then I hope you could base your judgment, again, on facts and on your observation of how China encroaches upon your interest. If you think China may be a partner and is a partner and look at China and deal with issues related to China as partners should do.
Have you had cause to reflect on China's external sort of actions in the last few years? Mm-hmm. The Lowy Institute and Pew have both done polling. Trust in China in Australia has dramatically decreased in the last few years. The latest Lowy poll showed just 16% of the Australians surveyed said they trusted China to act responsibly in world affairs. Now, that's down from 52% in 2018. So what responsibility does China take for that decline in trust in Australia?
I said maybe it started from a 5 or 6 years ago, a very tragic and saddening process that China has been misportrayed as being more aggressive or being more assertive. Well, as my country grows, of course, there will be more interaction, both in terms of political interaction and business engagement with almost every country in the world. And now China became the largest trading partner for 130 countries. And also the Belt and Road Initiative reached out to over 170 countries. People need to adapt it to these new elements. And that pertains to whether you hang on the Cold War or the outdated mentality, or you see China, or you accept China as a new element in the new international situation.
So no, you know, there's no self-reflection there about China's own actions in driving that decline?
We need to talk more. We need to communicate more with other countries, other governments, and the people from the other countries. But to be frank, I think before COVID, there are about 500,000 Australians who would visit China each year. If you ask them, I think most of them will tell you a different story because they've seen China from their eyes, they've experienced what happened in China. So they would give you more objective observation of China's the sentiment and the feelings of the Chinese people.
You'd be aware of comments that the Australian Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, made to the Australian newspaper about Taiwan recently. Dutton said it would be inconceivable that we wouldn't support the US in an action if the US chose to take that action. What's your response to his comments, and have you made any formal protest about those comments?
It's not the first time we heard a similar argument, but I think the public and political debate that happened here in relation to Taiwan is not well-founded, because it seems that all the debate is based on a so-called possible military conflict across the Taiwan Strait. But I believe people should look deeper into the history and the issue of sovereignty, because Taiwan was reunified into China at the end of the Second World War, when Australia, United States, Great Britain and China are all allies. And according to the international agreement that's been reached up before the end of the Second World War, Taiwan came back to China. So unification was achieved at that time. And China suffered a loss of 35 million people in its war against the aggression from Japan. And it's a heavy price to pay for achieving unification of the motherland. And if you study the history of China, you know how people cherish unification. And no government can afford to let a piece of territory go away from the motherland.
But Peter Dutton's comments suggest that Australia would support a US action if it got to that. Is what would be the consequences for Australia of making that unequivocal statement of support in a military engagement?
Again, that's a hypothetical question.
Well, but he's made these comments.
Yeah, I think the Australian government should abide by the One China policy, which is the foundation of our diplomatic relations and the foundation of any diplomatic relations between China and a foreign country. And today, the majority of the international community follow the One China policy and recognize the government of the People's Republic of China as the sole legal representative of the whole China. And if Australia really want to see peace and stability maintained in the region across the Taiwan Strait, they should try everything to stop the current DPP authority in Taiwan to pursue Taiwan independence.
My understanding is Australia's One China policy acknowledges the position of the PRC regarding Taiwan's status, acknowledge, not necessarily recognise or uphold that. There's a bit of ambiguity there. Have you lodged a formal protest? I didn't catch whether you've protested about Mr. Dutton's comments.
We talk with our counterparts in different departments about the issue of Taiwan repeatedly. Recently, there are several cases in relation to Taiwan that we don't agree. So we put forward our arguments, put forward our position, the government's position, to our relevant counterparts in your political establishment.
Are Mr. Dutton's comments about Taiwan and about China more generally, are they helpful to the relationship?
I think the politicians had an obligation to follow the government policy and also should do at their best to make this relationship moving towards a brighter future and not to to do anything that would lead to an even more gloomy state of our relationship. Because I remember the Foreign Minister, Madam Peng, said Australia wants a constructive relationship with China then. So it is an obligation for all the incumbent politicians to refrain from doing anything that's destructive to our relationship.
Are you saying his comments are destructive?
It's, I think they should, every minister and every politician and the secretaries should abide by the One China policy and should follow the principle that's been set up by the government.
Do you accept the Australian government's statement that former Prime Minister Tony Abbott's recent trip to Taiwan was just as a private citizen?
Yeah,
or do you draw any broader conclusions from that trip?
It is very unfortunate, actually, it is very agonizing to see that such a high-level politician would engage in something that doesn't serve the interest of Australia. Because I think it serves the interests of Australia and China to stick to One China policy and make our relationship as trouble-free as possible.
On AUKUS, China has been critical of this deal, but China itself has nuclear-propelled submarines and is modernising its military at quite a rapid rate. So how can you seriously say that it's adding to a regional arms race? Because Australia's plan is for at least eight nuclear-propelled submarines, but they probably won't start being in the water till the 2040s. How can that really be adding to a regional arms race when you consider the context, including China's own military expansion?
Daniel, you have a point. As many other countries in the world and in the region, China is concerned about the formation about AUKUS, but I think it is the Australian people that should be more worried about AUKUS and about the acquisition of nuclear-powered submarine.
Why is that?
Two reasons. I will simplify all the concerns into two reasons, the worries into two reasons. The first is the nuclear safety. You know what happened to Chernobyl? About 34 years after the incident, it still had an impact on people's life. And you know what happened to Fukushima? And recently, there's a collision of U.S. submarine Kinetic. So you cannot guarantee nothing would happen to such a vessel powered by a nuclear reactor.
Doesn't that criticism apply to China too?
You know, but there's zero nuclear capacity technologically in Australia that would guarantee you will be trouble-free, you will be incident-free. And if anything happened, are the politicians ready to say sorry to people in Melbourne and Adelaide? We are concerned because we are going to buy things from your Antarctica coast. So that's why we are worried. We are concerned about the nuclear safety. The second thing that the Australian people should worry is the nation's branding. Look at the reactions from all over the world about AUKUS, about the proposal about of this nuclear-powered submarine. Australia is branded as a genuine follower and genuine supporter of international institutions and international system. By trying to acquire a nuclear-powered submarine, it certainly have an impact on the ongoing non-proliferation system. So I'm going to be a naughty guy. The second thing is people of my age in China see Australia as a peace lover after the Second World War and a contributor to regional integration and global development. The APEC initiative was brilliant, but nowadays people know that a nuclear-powered submarine is designed to launch long-range attack against a target far away. So who are you going to attack? You are no longer a peace lover, a peace defender. You become a saber-wielder in certain form. And the third thing is people know this is a partnership formed by three Anglo-Saxon countries. So it's an Anglo-Saxon clique. So it shows that certain people in your country still have a mentality of a concentric stratification of people according to their cultural and ethnic background. So I think those people who really cherish multilateralism and multiculturalism should be worried because certain people are still hanging on. The legacy of the colonial British Empire, the idea of Pax Americana, and even trying to pursue Pax Anglo-Ana.
And on human rights, if everything is fine in Xinjiang, why won't China allow unfettered access to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet?
Actually, the talk's been going on between the UN High Commission on Human Rights and our relevant department. The preparation's going on, for the visit. But also we have invited ambassadors from certain Western countries, including Australia, to visit Xinjiang to see with their eye what happened there. I think the current judgment on the situation in Xinjiang by your government is very ill-advised. What's the evidence about the so-called ethnic cleansing, about so-called camp? It's based on certain satellite image, which falsely identified the senior citizens' house and even markets as a camp.
But coming back to the question, those talks between Ms. Bachelet and the Chinese authorities have been going on for quite some time, and she's recently raised concerns that she's not able to report progress on seeking meaningful access. So the issue is around meaningful access. Why wouldn't you just allow meaningful, unfettered access, or is there something to hide?
When you visit a place, because nothing like the Western media has described happened in Xinjiang, the Chinese government spent a lot of energy and resources on de-radicalization and also on preventing the terrorist attack from taking place again. And we are trying very hard to boost the capacity, the capability of the local population, particularly those from minority ethnic background, to give them more opportunity for economic and social development.
Just on the outlook, we've seen the trade actions we discussed earlier in the interview, but iron ore hasn't been affected yet. Should iron ore exporters from Australia be worried about the prospect of further actions?
I don't think any exporters should be worried about a normal trade with China, because you see our import in the first three quarters grew by roughly 32%, and the commodity export from Australia to China in the first three quarters grew in the similar proportion, about 31.6%. So it shows a strong complementarity between our two economy, and it serves the interest to engage in deeper economic and trade ties.
One more on trade, though. Would China be looking at ending the unofficial ban on Australian coal in any time soon?
I would not describe what happened to the coal as you described, because our customer administration will look into the quality, will look into the safety of the import according to their rules. Again, I think economic and trade ties between our two countries are mutually beneficial, and there should not be barriers. We should promote our economic and trade ties according to international norm and according to international rules. And again, I hope all the barriers and obstacles that has been set up here in Australia against the Chinese business will be removed. And as far as I know, there are still people pushing for more barriers, more obstacles, discriminatorily against the Chinese business, which will not be helpful for the improvement of our relationship.
The final question on the outlook. Scott Morrison has said that he wants happy coexistence as the end point. Is that achievable, and how can that be achieved? How can China and Australia have that peaceful coexistence? Or is it more likely that there's an extended period of difficult relationship? What's your view on whether we're stuck with this for the years ahead?
Again, I said we want this relationship to be mutually beneficial to both peoples and both countries on the basis of mutual respect. And the economic benefit and the political trust are the two wheels of our relationship. We can't imagine that there will be a very cordial relationship in certain fields without a solid foundation of good analysis of each other's strategic intention and political trust between the leadership. So we need to build this relationship in the coming five decades in a comprehensive way, because we are a comprehensive strategic partnership. We can't focus our relationship only in certain fields with negligence of the other fields.
Mr. Wong, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for listening. We appreciate it. You know the drill: share, tell your friends, rate, review, all of the above. Now, at the top of the conversation, I mentioned Daniel and I needed to put some other information in front of you. During this interview, you will have heard that the ambassador accused the Nine Network journalist Jonathan Kersley of a breach of professional ethics. Naturally, we sought a response from Kersley. He says the acting ambassador confirms the meeting took place and the list was given to me by the embassy official. The only fabrication he speaks of is that the list should be longer than 14 points. In the years since I revealed this list, no Chinese official has ever denied the substance of my reports, nor does the acting ambassador do so in his interview with Guardian Australia. And it is inconceivable that a Chinese diplomat would ever deliver such an extraordinary list to a journalist without the explicit consent of senior officials in the Chinese Communist Party. Also, on Friday morning, the Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, was on Breakfast Television, Daniel, and was asked about this interview, and he gave a response. What's the guts of that?
So Peter Dutton was asked to respond on the Today Show to Wang Xining's comment that Australian politicians should refrain from doing anything destructive to the relationship. Dutton said that the comments were inflammatory and quite remarkable. Dutton said, quote, "It's not just in Australia, it's in India, Japan, in most other countries of this world, this type of diplomacy, this provocative sort of comical statement. Really, it's so silly, it's funny. And I think the acting ambassador is reading off a script from the Communist Party. But I think most Australians see through the non-productive nature of the comments and they should be dismissed in that vein." That's what Dutton had to say.
Okay, so that is the housekeeping that we needed you to listen to. A little bit of further housekeeping. Allow me to thank, of course, the executive producer of the pod this week, who is Melanie Tate. The wonderful Miles Martignoni is off on parental leave at the moment. And thank you to the dear Karishma Luthria, who cuts the episode and has certainly done that this week. We're entering the final two sitting weeks of Parliament for 2021. We'll be back next week.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.